We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 134. Today, Scott is unable to join. He's unable to record, so we have Rich Kaufman joining. Rich, it's been a long time since you've been on the podcast. I think it was 2015 trade deadline, if I go by my Skype call history.
Wow, and it has been a long time, and good to be back with you guys. I'm sad that Scott is not here to do the show, because it's been, you know, a crazy few days in with the Yankees. So, but good to be here.
Yeah, it's been a wild first month of baseball. I think it's sort of caught us all by surprise.
No, definitely. I mean, if you would have told me that going into May 1st, the Yankees would have, you know, one of the top records in baseball without Sanchez, basically without Greg Bird, without Didi for most of April, I think everyone would take it.
Hell yeah. If you guys want 25% off in the fan shop, use code COMEBACK. And obviously, in honor of the weekend, that Friday game was perhaps the most wild game of the season, and they almost had another one of them on Sunday afternoon, turned into sort of just a 5.5 hour disappointment. But use code COMEBACK for 25% off in the fan shop. And Rich, you excited for June 10th?
I am. It's gonna be fun. I was at the game. I was at the stadium on Friday, and I taste tested the Bronx Brewery Pale Ale just to, you know, get a little preview of what we're going to be having on June 10th, and it's going to be good. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's a good summer beer, right?
It is. Very, very refreshing. Very, you know, nice taste. I like it.
So you guys know the deal by now. For $64, you get not only a ticket to the game in sections 205 and 206, but you also get a two-hour pregame party at Billy's with the beer provided by the Bronx Brewery, and it's going to be that banner ale that Rich just mentioned. So go to bronxpinstripes.com or any one of our social media websites, and you will see the link to go buy those tickets. We've already sold a bunch of them, so it's going to be an awesome gathering. Definitely looking forward to it. So, Rich, like you were saying, I mean, this first month of baseball has been extremely fun, more fun than I think any of us really thought. I think this might be my favorite Yankees team since that 2007 team, which obviously we remember having a huge disappointment in the bug game in Cleveland, and it sort of ended in disappointment, and it was kind of the end of an era because Joe Torre was fired after that. But that team was a lot of fun in the second half. They were never out of games, and that's the sense I'm getting from this team, kind of.
Right, no, I agree. You look at this team, it's a bunch of, you know, it's a bunch of different pieces coming together to, they're a really likable bunch of guys, I feel like. You got Torres, like, where the hell did this guy come from? You got Chase Headley having a good year. You got Austin Romine having a good year. So it's like a throwback to those teams where it seems like they all like each other and the fans are kind of connecting to them, which is good to see.
They are tied for first in the division with Baltimore. They lead the AL in runs and home runs. I mean, the ball is just flying out of the ballpark. That's kind of a trend across all of baseball, but at least the Yankees are on the good side of the trend for a change. And when I was actually looking at it today, their playoff odds have gone up immensely. They weren't expected to make the playoffs, and they're still kind of not expected to make the playoffs because now, for instance, Fangraphs is projecting them for 86 wins, and at the beginning of the season, they were projecting them for 79, but that is still plus 7 from what we've seen after the first month. So I think at the very least, what they've done is they've set themselves up for a fun season, which is exactly what we all wanted.
Right. You look at last April, that month kind of killed them, you know. I think Joe Girardi said it a few times that cost them a shot at the playoffs. So to get off to a good start this year, that gives them, you know, such a big boost going into May, you know, it gives them a lot more room to work with, I guess, if that makes sense. So it's, you know, it's definitely good to get off to a good start, and, you know, they got to keep it going.
And I mean, we've seen Toronto do the exact opposite, and they're probably burying their season at this point.
Right, because if you look at the schedule, I mean, a lot of April has been against the AL East. So if you bury yourself early, I mean, you don't get these games back against the division. So you can't win the division in April, but you can certainly, you know, push yourself out of the race.
Well, as we know, as the cliche goes, these games count for just as much as the ones in September.
Right.
you mentioned it sort of in the open, but the Yankees did it without Sanchez, without Didi, pretty much without any production from first base. I mean, I may have jinxed Greg Bird because I was predicting MVP level numbers from him at the end of spring training after we were down there in Tampa and I saw him smack balls all over the park. But I mean, he's been completely absent. Chris Carter, and we got a bunch of mailbags on Chris Carter complaining about him. We'll get to those a little bit. But those are three huge positions that we were counting on, and they haven't done anything, and the Yankees are still winning.
Yeah, it's scary thinking about what could possibly happen with this team when you get Sanchez back. You finally, hopefully Bird can show something at some point, but when all these guys kind of get back and get into a groove, it's scary what this offense can do when it's this good right now.
But also, guys like Torres, guys like Romine have been excellent. They haven't been, though, what Didi and what Sanchez we hope will be.
Right. No, they've been good stopgap players. They've probably even been better than anybody thought they could be. I think at one point, Torres, you know, he was tied for the team lead with 13 RBIs, which is just, who would have thought that? And he has a four-hit game or a five-hit game this year. It's crazy what he's done.
He's fun. He's a fun player. But I was kind of getting annoyed when people were legitimately saying, what are we going to do with Torres when Didi comes back? I mean, let's not get crazy here.
Yeah. I mentioned I was at the game Friday, and when they were down 9-1, and it was Didi's first game back, you're like, you know, the pessimistic Yankee fan in me was like, oh, he messed up the mojo. Like, Torres is like the mascot on this team. You know, everyone loves him, and now he's on the bench. But Didi stepped in, and Torres, I think he's better suited to be like a role player because now he can play short, he can play third, he can play second. He's more versatile now than I think he was before.
We also, I mean, I think he'd get exposed if he was a full time player. I mean, I don't know that, and maybe he is better than we all think, but I think he's pretty well suited for that utility role. And I'm happy that Didi has come back and looked like he's in midseason form. And it's crazy how good he's looked. And he had that game tying single on Sunday. Are you surprised with how good he looks? So after being out for a month, I mean, you'd figure there'd be at least a little bit of rust, but it doesn't seem like there is.
No, I am surprised. I mean, you usually see with these guys when they come back after they've been out for a month that it takes them a while to get back into the swing of things. But he's, you know, he's hit the ground running, and it's been great. He had, what, three hits on Sunday? So
I think he's batting exactly – I think he's 6-for-12 since returning, so exactly .500.
Yeah, no, it's impressive, especially with the shoulder injury. For him to swing the bat like that, it's, you know, it's a bonus for him to come back like that right now.
He and his arm at shortstop is ridiculous. I mean, it's a night and day between him and Torres' arm.
Oh, it's insane. I mean, Torres gets the ball there. You know, he doesn't lollipop it, but you do see such a difference with Didi. He throws lasers over to first.
I'm excited for Didi's season. I think that it's going to be tough now missing a month of baseball, but I honestly thought he had a chance to be one of the shortstops represented in the All-Star game.
Yeah, no, he barely missed that last year on the All-Star game, and I thought the same thing for this year. He's gotten better each year, which is what you want to see. So that month, you know, that month off hurt him, but you know, it's good to see him back.
I always think he followed up Derek Jeter, which might be the most impossible person to follow up in New York City. So he's outdone all of our expectations for him when they traded, what was it, Shane Green? Shane Green for
Shane
Didi?
Green.
Yeah.
You remember when people were outraged that they traded Shane Green?
Yeah. Yeah. People were saying, we saw tweets about Shane Green's ERA up until like July of that season because Didi was having a pretty bad first half in 2015, right? That was 2015. And I remember, wasn't Shane Green having like a pretty decent season?
Yeah, his first few starts were good, I think, and everyone was calling for Catchman's head, as usually happens with these trades when they don't work out for the first 2 weeks.
And I'm also glad that we have the start spreading the news tweets and Instagram posts from Didi back. And I don't know if you caught this, but he used the clown emoji to represent Brett Gardner. Now, I really want to get to the bottom of this because is Brett Gardner the clubhouse clown? Or I thought maybe on second guessing, I was thinking maybe that because that clown is bald, that's why he's using it to represent Gardner.
Yeah, when you look at Gardner, you really don't think of him being a clown, you know.
No.
He's more of a serious kind of guy, but, you know, I did see that tweet, and it was funny, you know, because he uses the judge emoji for Aaron Judge, obviously, which is good, which is clever, but it might be just be because he's bald.
All right, I want to take a minute to tell you guys about HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that focuses on the whole experience of cooking, making it a fun process and not just about the final plate. Each week, HelloFresh creates a new and delicious recipe with step-by-step instructions designed to take about 30 minutes to make, from everyone from a novice cook to experienced cooks. They deliver food right to your doorstep in a recyclable, insulated box for free. And that's the best part of this. It is convenient. I'm sure people listening right now don't have time after work to go shopping and to cook a meal, especially if you want to be down on your couch for that 7 p.m. Yankee start. I know I end up just throwing together some leftovers or whatever I have in the fridge because I get home late and just don't want to deal with cooking. But that's why you need to check out HelloFresh, which is now offering light spring meals and breakfast options that are all less than $10 per meal. They sent me some food and I made an Italian chicken dish and it was really, really good and it was actually pretty easy to make. That was the best part about it. I didn't have to run around for things I didn't really have in my kitchen or anything like that. And it's a nice change of pace from the three or four things that I usually make. So for $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com and enter promo code PINSTRIPES30. Again, $30 off. That's a good deal. Use promo code PINSTRIPES30. There are no spaces in that promo code. Rich, Aaron Judge has been the story so far for the Yankees. And I hope people aren't sick of hearing about Aaron Judge because Scott and I have pretty much led with him on every podcast and for good reason. I mean, leading the team, leading the AL in home runs with 10. I saw the stat today on the broadcast that he has 1.8 WAR. And that's good for sixth in the American League. So according to Sabermetrics, I mean, he's right up there with guys like Bryce Harper and Mike Trout. He's also got a 217 WRC plus. I don't know if you're familiar with WRC plus, but it's basically how many runs you're creating. So, I mean, he is just blowing away all expectations.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how excited I am about Judge, to have a homegrown guy like this with his, you know, the idea that he could be a superstar. I think we saw it with Gary Sanchez, but he's been out now. But to have Judge do what he's doing, it makes everyone excited for the future.
Here's the thing, though. So, like you just said, we saw it with Gary Sanchez. He had a month like this last August. We saw it with Trevor Story last year, last April, had 10 home runs, and he kind of disappeared. Are you slightly worried that Judge is going to not disappear, but I mean, there's no way he can keep this pace up. I mean, it's just unrealistic to expect from a rookie.
Yeah. He's not going to hit 50 home runs.
He's actually on pace for 74.
Yeah, 74.
Which you might notice is one more than Bonds' 73.
Right. All right. So we could get a new home run king maybe, but no, I agree. It's not sustainable. But what you're seeing is, see, what I look at, his at-bats from last year and how different his at-bats are this year. He's taking pitches that he wasn't taking last year.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, the sliders away, the fastballs just off the plate. He's letting those go, which is impressive because he's improving.
He swung at, I mean, every slider and curve off the plate away from him, he swung at last year, like every single one.
Oh, yeah. It was like Alfonso Soriano. 2003. Two strikes, you know it's coming, swing and miss, going back to the dugout. I mean, that's what he did last year. He struck out in half of his at-bats. This year, he's more selective. He's swinging at the pitches he wants to swing at, not what the pitcher wants him to swing at.
The strikeout rate is down to about 26%, and the walk rate is up to over, it was 11% before today's game, and he walked, I think it was three times on Sunday, so it's up over 11%. I mean, that's where the walks are actually starting to stand out to me, because you're honestly seeing pitchers starting to pitch tentatively towards him.
Yeah, today you had Chase Headley hitting behind him, and So you, if you're a pitcher, you're looking at what Judge has done recently, and then you're looking at Chase Headley. On the, I know Headley's had a good year so far, but who would you rather pitch to right now?
Oh, no question.
Right. So, and that's another thing. When Sanchez comes back, where does he slot in, and what do you do to protect Judge?
Yeah, it's difficult because I also think Girardi loves mixing up the righties and the lefties.
Oh yeah, he's not going to go. He's not going to stack righties or lefties. He needs to go right left. So what do you do with Holiday then?
It's creating problems how badly Bird is playing.
Yeah,
I mean problems. I feel stupid saying problems. They've got tied for the best record in their division. They're leading in runs and home runs and all that. But Bird, we all counted on Bird. Bird needs to start hitting. It's getting to a point where it's getting a little worrisome. It's a full month of baseball, and he looks completely lost at the plate.
Yeah, he's either fouling a pitch back that he should hit, he's striking out, he's walking, or he's getting hit by a pitch. That's the only outcomes he's giving you right now. So it's at some point, I know Cashman was asked on Sunday if he would think about sending him down, and he said no way. Like there's no way that they're gonna demote him at this point. So well, I guess you gotta stick with him.
Well, would you want to play Chris Carter every day?
See, but Bert's not hitting, so anything Carter does is, I don't know.
No, you can't.
You can't.
I mean, if Chris Carter was hitting just even a little bit, I could see them at least giving Bird extended time off to try and clear his head. But Chris Carter is just as bad, if not worse, because he's not even getting on base the few times, like you mentioned, Greg Bird is getting on base.
Right. So against lefties, would you start Greg Bird just to get him as many at-bats as possible?
Yeah, I think so. I think the only way he's going to start hitting is, I mean, stupid, but the only way he's going to break out of this is if he's playing. And having him sit every 2 or 3 days or 4 days, depending on when they face a lefty, like today, Wade Miley, like is Wade Miley really somebody that you're afraid to stick Greg Bird up there against?
Right.
So no, I understand right. No, he sat right. Against Chris Sale. I mean, Chris Sale might be the nastiest left-handed pitcher since Randy Johnson, but Wade Miley sucks. Like we don't need to sit him against Wade Miley.
Right. And at the same time, Bird is still developing. I mean, he has what, half a season under his belt in the major leagues. So you want him to face as many lefties as possible so he can get accustomed to facing them if you want him to be a full-time player down the road. So the whole platoon thing doesn't make sense to me, but it's Girardi. So
I remember Paul O'Neill talking about why he had the reputation of that he couldn't hit lefties. It was because in Cincinnati, he never played against lefties. It wasn't that he couldn't hit lefties. It's just he never played against lefties. So then he got that reputation. Then he came over to the Yankees, and they stuck him in there every day, and obviously he could start hitting lefties. I mean, he won the batting title in whenever it was, 1994 or 1993.
So, right, look at Didi. He can hit lefties now because he played against – wasn't there an idea that he was going to platoon with Brendan Ryan or something?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there was.
That Brendan Ryan was going to play against lefties. But if you look at Didi's numbers against lefties, he can hit them now because he's seen them. So I think that's what Bird needs to do as well.
He had the highest batting average. Didi had the highest batting average against left-handed pitchers last year of anybody. It was like .340. It was, I mean, much higher than his average against righties. His average against righties was pretty good too. I think it was like .275 or something like that. But he hit .340 against lefties.
Yeah, no, it's impressive. And, you know, like I said, Bird needs to play every day if he wants to get out of this funky zone.
Yeah, and I think most people are sick and tired of seeing Chris Carter. I want to get back to Judge though for a second. He had those two shots on Friday night. You were at the game. One of them was 119 miles an hour off the bat, and it went like 45 feet off the ground. My dad texted me that it was a Dave Winfield shot. He loves calling them Dave Winfield shots. Like in the 80s, that was his favorite thing, that Winfield would hit these rising line drives, and he says that Judge reminds him of him. But I mean, what was it like in the stadium for those two shots? Because those are two home runs that, yeah, he can hit those majestic high ones, but those line shots are just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's almost as like he hits them and they're still going up when they go over the fence. Like they just keep rising. There are no doubters off the bat, and the crowd anticipates it. So what he's doing right now, I know they've said it 1,000 times, but he is must watch. Like, you stop what you're doing when he comes up to the plate, because you never know. He might hit one 500 feet and you want to see it.
I think we're going to see one 500 feet this year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Manny Machado hit one, what, 470?
Yeah, that thing was over the restaurant in center field.
Yeah, Judge can hit one onto that new MasterCard batters, whatever the hell it is, in center field.
How are the new digs at Yankee Stadium?
They're nice. They're nice. I didn't think I would like them, just because I like anything that reminds me of the old stadium.
Right. Well, it was about time they got rid of those obstructed view bleachers. That was ridiculous.
Oh, that was horrible. I don't know why they did that to begin with, but no, they're nice. They're nice. People are going to like it for sure.
10 of Judge's 23 hits have gone for home runs. That's ridiculous. That's like 40%, 45%. Does it worry you at all that just like this is not sustainable and he's going to go through maybe an extended slump, or pitchers are going to adjust, or whatever it may be?
Yeah. And like you said, he's what, on pace for 74 home runs. That's not possible. He's got to sprinkle in some extra, you know, some doubles, singles. He did that. He did that on Sunday, which was good to see. But yeah, I think he is relying on the home run too much.
Well, is he relying on it, or is that just, I mean, he makes contact and the ball goes? I mean, I think it was David Cohn on Friday who said in that second home run, I mean, that's a double for 99% of players, except his ball went over the fence because he's a freak.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he's just a freak. He's just a player we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Which is true. I mean, you look at his size, he's probably the biggest position player to ever play. So maybe he's just doing stuff we haven't seen before. But, I mean, the reputation on him in the minors was that he wasn't a home run hitter, you know, that he was more of a line drive type of guy. But I guess
neither was Gary Sanchez.
Right. That's true.
So the Yankees completed the short 2-game sweep against Boston. Tanaka versus Sale was the pitching matchup everyone wanted to see. You know my opinion on Tanaka, that I don't think he is a quote-unquote ace. Everyone who's listening probably knows my opinion on him. But that might have been his best performance as a Yankee so far.
Yeah, definitely was. If you take into account the lineup he was facing, the ballpark at Fenway, obviously, which is a bandbox, very rarely do you see shutouts there. And you consider the pitcher he was going up against, Sale, who, if you give up one run, the game could be over. So for him to completely shut down the Red Sox, I think I tweeted, I said that was his best start as a Yankee.
We actually got a mailbag from Brandon, and he says, "Hey, Andrew, is a complete game 3-hitter in Boston something an ace does? Had to bust your balls a little about Tanaka." And that 3-hitter complete game shutout on less than 100 pitches, which I guess people call the Maddox. I didn't realize that's what people are calling that now, but obviously that is an ace-like performance. But I have two reasons why I'm still not going to call him an ace. First of all, he was on 7 days rest, and we know that Tanaka does better when he has the longer rest. I mean, that's how it was in Japan. It was 6 days rest in Japan, and he just clearly performs better when he has that extra rest. So 7 days rest is something that you might only see once or twice a year. And also, the Red Sox offense was really struggling, especially in the middle of the last week when the Yankees were at Fenway. So I still need to see more from Tanaka. I mean, that was really his first good start of the season. So he had a few bad starts to start the season. I understand he stepped up. He nutted up against Boston for all those reasons you just said. But it's just like, can we see something on 5 days rest? And I don't want to have to rely on our ace getting an extra day just so he can be an ace.
Right. Yeah, I think I kind of am leaning towards agreeing with you that he's not an ace. I know a lot of people disagree. But the thing I go back to is that wild card game, which against the Astros in 2015, where he goes five innings. Like, dude, You got to give me more than that. You got to give me more than that.
Yeah, but the people, the counter argument that people will give you is that the Yankees scored zero runs that game, right? Didn't they score zero or one? I don't even remember.
Yeah, well, Keuchel shut them down. But still, like, an ace, I don't know. I don't get the – he's a different kind of pitcher than the other aces in the league, I feel like. And that's what people argue about.
So people insist on calling your best – people insist on calling team's best pitcher their ace. Just because you have a number one pitcher or your best pitcher doesn't make him an ace. I reserve that – label for someone like Clayton Kershaw or Madison Bumgarner, who I know is not, I mean, not this year, but, or John Lester, like we saw in the playoffs last year. Those types of pitchers are aces. There's only like maybe five or six of them in the league. Every team has a number one that doesn't make him an ace in my book.
Right. Now I see where you're coming from. So he's the Yankees ace.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, okay. Right. Sure.
Right. He's an ace on this particular team.
Yes, and I've never said he's a bad pitcher. I mean, that would be stupid. I'd be an idiot if I said that. Yes, he's a great pitcher. And he is the Yankees' best pitcher. Although Severino this year is maybe giving him a little run for his money. But I think Severino has ace potential because of the stuff.
Right, I was gonna ask, do you think he is better suited to being called an ace because he throws 98 miles an hour?
I mean,
and that's
yeah.
just what we associate, you know, a power pitcher. You know, Roger Clemens is an ace. Syndergaard on the – well, he got hurt, but you know, guys like that, those are true aces.
Yeah, I think you need to be able to shut a team down in October by striking people out. Don't let the ball in play. Don't even let it up to your fielders. Just do all the work. Those are aces.
Right. And Tanaka didn't have that many strikeouts against the Red Sox.
No, I think he had four.
Three or four. Yeah.
I mean, but it was a great performance. It was a Maddox-like performance. We saw that from Maddox a billion times where there would be like 40 dribblers to the second baseman, and you're like, what the hell is going on? So,
right. I think the hype that surrounded Tanaka before he came over here, we heard about. He pitched in, what, back-to-back days over there to win the championship in Japan. And it was almost like an urban legend with this guy. And that when he came over here, he didn't – it's not that he hasn't lived – I don't know. He hasn't lived up to the hype, I guess.
Has any Japanese pitcher ever lived up to the hype? I mean, Daisuke Matsuzaka came over here like he was the second coming, and he was mediocre at best. Yu Darvish has been pretty – he's been pretty good, but didn't he have Tommy John surgery?
Yeah. And he's in Texas where nobody cares, you know,
right.
No one follows. Right.
I mean, Arabu was a complete disaster. Hideo Nomo was great, but I don't think he was ever considered the best pitcher on any team he was on.
Kagawa. Can't forget about Igawa.
Cannot forget about Igawa. Banked 40 mil. So, I mean, it was an ace like performance, and it was something that the Yankees, I'm not going to say desperately needed, but it was amazing to see at Fenway Park. There's nothing I love better than shutting down the Red Sox at Fenway Park, which always seems like you're right around the corner from disaster. And we saw that with Chapman the night before, which Scott and I have already talked about this, but I was thinking that imagine Chapman gives up that home run or blows that game. And then the Yankees got to go face Chris Sale, who struck out 10 batters in his last four or five outings. I mean, the dude is filthy. They're not scoring for Chris Sale, so his record looks terrible, but his stats are unbelievable.
Yeah. Like I said before, the pessimistic Yankee fan in me, this start has been so good for this team that I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop. Mm-hmm. I've been waiting for the six-game losing streak. And I was ready for it to begin with Chapman on, what was it, Wednesday?
Yep.
I was ready for him to blow it, but he didn't. If he did, I would have just assumed they would have, you know, they were going to go on the street. They were going to get back to 500, and then this whole big start would have been to waste. But Tanaka came through.
What do you think was up with Chapman that night? I mean, he was throwing 96, which is off for him.
Yeah, that was strange. It was concerning when he grabbed. It was like the outside of his elbow, which is good. I guess the inside, that's more, you know, Tommy John area. I don't know. That was strange.
I mean, he pitched Sunday and looked fine, so.
Yeah, maybe it's just a muscular thing, and it's not anything in his, you know, structurally in his elbow, but.
He hadn't pitched in 4 days between Saturday and last Wednesday. He didn't pitch. So, and it was a cold night. That was the foggy night.
Right.
It was like 40 degrees in Boston. It was disgusting. So, I mean, it's just not prime conditions, especially when you haven't thrown in 4 days.
Mm-hmm. And he threw, what, 40 pitches? So
yeah.
Maybe it was just muscle tightening or something. I don't know.
I just have flashbacks to how he was used in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, you hope, you know, all the innings aren't adding up. And, I mean, the guy is a freak. He throws 101 miles an hour, and he manages to stay healthy. It's crazy. Knock on wood.
All right, the game of the year, Friday, 14-11, extra inning walk-off. You stayed for the whole thing, right? You didn't bail?
No, did not bail.
How many people would you say bailed?
Maybe half or a little less than half.
It looked decently crowded when Ellsbury hit the grand slam. And I feel like if you're there for the grand slam, you're going to stay till the end. Like, I understand leaving it 9-1, but when it's 11-2, would that make it 11-8 after Ellsbury's slam? Yep. Like, you're sticking around.
Yeah. Now a lot of people left after the top of the eighth.
When was
Ellsbury's grand slam? Forget
earlier in the game, because I remember it was Trumbo hit the grand slam, and then I was kind of flipping back and forth to some NBA playoffs, and then I was following on my phone, and I saw Ellsbury hit the grand slam, and that got me interested again. And I thought it was going to be a classic Yankees tease, right? Like, how many times have we seen that before?
Yeah, no, I was expecting them to get close like they did in Pittsburgh in that final game where they had a chance to win it at the end and couldn't. But no, people left around the eighth inning. A lot of Orioles fans left too, which I was just, you know, I wanted to see them suffer through their loss. But I mean, that's weak. You got to stay for the whole game.
No, Zach Britton is huge for the Orioles, and it's another reason why the Yankees were able to come back Sunday.
Oh, definitely. If Britton's in that game, he's as automatic as they come. You know, he's not coughing up that lead.
You know what it reminded me of? I don't know if you remember a game against Texas where Posada hit a walk-off home run at Yankee mm-hmm. Stadium, but the Yankees were down huge in that game too. Yeah. I don't even remember what season this was. It might have been 2007. Like I said, that team was always coming back in 07, because I am positive that Mark Teixeira was on the Rangers. But I don't remember exactly what year, but they had a huge comeback and then a rally and a walk-off by Posada. It kind of reminded me of that game where, for whatever reason, that game was not over. And you just kind of had a feeling after Ellsbury hit that grand slam. It was like, just get somebody as the tying run. Happened to be Castro with the one knee finish. I mean, that might be the picture of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Reggie Jackson, like, you know, down on one knee. It was a no-doubter off the bat, too, which is you know, when you're in the stands, it's fun to see.
Is it kind of because of the comeback, people probably forgot that CeCe didn't look too good?
Yeah, no, he didn't. It's what, two
starts in a row? He had the horrible one in Pittsburgh. He was slightly mm-hmm. better against Baltimore. But, yeah, I mean, CeCe, I think this is just something we're going to have to – this is what CeCe is at this point. If he's not 100% on, it's going to look ugly. I mean, but that's what CeCe is. He's our number four or number five starter. I mean, he's 37 at the end of his career.
Yeah, and especially against a team like the Orioles, who all they do is hit home runs, it feels like, in Yankee Stadium. So if he's not, you know, pinpoint accuracy, if he's, you know, to the left or right from his spot, he's going to get hit. He's going to give up home runs, which is what happened.
And it's fine. I honestly think Sabathia just giving the Yankees five innings is fine. As long as we have Tanaka and Pineda and Severino getting past the sixth inning, which they have in this month. The reason the Yankees are winning, yes, their offense has been tremendous, but their starting pitching has been tremendous as well. Routinely getting past the sixth inning, which is something they didn't do in 2015 and 2016. So we can handle Sabathia not doing it, but you need more than half of your starters to get you through the sixth inning so you don't absolutely trash the bullpen.
Right. You need the other guys to make up ground, which is, you know, on Monday, Severino has to go out there because the bullpen is completely taxed from Sunday. Severino's got to go out there and give you at least seven innings, I feel like.
And he has the last few times out.
Yeah.
So I actually, it's crazy how much confidence I have in Severino. And I have confidence in him because it looks like he has confidence in himself.
Right. Especially with that changeup, which everyone's talking about. He's throwing the changeup more. And I think Roman has really helped him, which is another thing when Sanchez comes back. Roman has gotten so much credit with his pitching staff and how they performed since he's been the everyday catcher, that when Sanchez comes back, the moment someone, you know, Severino gives up a four spot, people are going to question, oh, Roman, you know.
We got classic. We got Romine personal catcher mailbags as soon as he had that. As soon as Pineda had that perfect game bid on opening day.
Right. People make such a big deal about personal. You know, was it Randy Johnson? John Flaherty was Randy Johnson's personal catcher.
Well, like, Randy Johnson was a dick.
Well, he was a head case. He was a psycho. But
do you think Romine though has at least earned himself more playing time?
I don't know. It's
you don't
want to
take. I know, right? You don't want to take Sanchez out of the lineup. I mean, he's your centerpiece going forward. So
maybe when he first comes back, if you don't want to play Sanchez every day because he's just coming, you know, back from an injury, you want to still get Roman in there. But if Sanchez stays healthy, I think he's got to be obviously the guy.
Yeah, Roman was probably going to get one day a week behind the plate. So
he's going to get Montgomery probably.
Because you're right. Mm-hmm. And then probably the occasional day game after a night game, whoever it falls on.
So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that the pen was fried from Sunday. Let's try and make sense of Brian Mitchell playing first base. So I've never seen more mass confusion on Twitter among people who should know what's going on. Like Brian Hawk tweeted that, the Yankees pinch hit for Brian Mitchell, but they really pinch hit for Aroldis Chapman because Mitchell goes to first base, so you lose Carter. Chapman comes in to pitch the top of the 10th. Girardi is doing this because he wants to bring Mitchell back in after Chapman, but he doesn't really have a deep bullpen, so he doesn't want to take him out of the game. To me, it's already wacky as is. Like, that's already something that you wouldn't expect from Joe Girardi. Maybe from someone like Joe Maddon, but certainly not Joe Girardi. But if that's not confusing enough, I guess they lose the DH in that scenario, so they have to pinch hit for Chapman, who was hitting for Holiday. And it just caused everyone to be confused.
Yeah, if you were keeping score, you know, the scorebook, that's a nightmare. I would just give up at that point. Even, you know, Kay and Cohen in the booth were stumped. They had no idea. I had no idea. I was looking on Twitter. People were scrambling to come up with a reason as to why Mitchell was at, or why, you know, why they lost at DH. Just that whole game was strange because you had that balk call on O'Day, which then they said was obstruction, which then they changed back to being a balk, which made no sense. And then you even had a problem with the lights. They put the lights on.
Light gate.
Light gate, right. They put the lights on in the bottom half when the Yankees were up. So, you know, to make it fair, they had to leave it off because it was off for the Orioles. So just the whole game was probably the strangest one I've seen in a long time.
I immediately thought that was a balk because he kind of did a double step. So I thought it was a balk to begin with. And then the obstruction was bullshit. There's no way that was obstruction. Regardless, though, we had that whole charade of Mitchell at first. That didn't bite the Yankees, but he then comes back into the game and ends up giving up the lead an inning later. So it was a whole big to-do, and it ended up just in disappointment. Like, It was great that the Yankees came back again. I was happy that Didi got the hit. But then they had Carter up with men on base, and he didn't do shit. Castro and Judge both made out when they could in the 10th inning, right? Was that the bottom of the 10th?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Yankees had so many chances in that game. What'd they leave? Or would they have 20 men on base?
They had like 24 base runners or something, yeah, Cone said. And to only score 4 runs, that's
horrible.
That's hard to do. That's one thing about this team that concerns me going forward is their hitting with runners in scoring position and situational hitting. All they needed in some of those spots was a sac fly.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get it.
It's like all they needed was a sac fly against Pittsburgh last weekend in the 9th inning, and they couldn't get it.
Right. It's like a lot. I don't know. It's frustrating. Yeah. And because they've won so much these past couple weeks, that hasn't been talked about.
Well, if the home runs die down, then they're screwed.
That'll stick out more. Right.
Because they're batting .247 with runners in scoring position. It's 16th in baseball. So in the middle of the pack, not horrendous, but not what you'd think of a team leading in runs.
Right. But I feel like the Yankees are never good with runners in scoring position, right? It's been a problem with them for like 15 years.
The 98 Yankees were pretty good.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true.
No, I know what you're saying, though. I still think, though, this offense has more versatility and can score runs in more ways than the last couple years where you had guys like A-Rod and Teixeira and McCann and Beltran clogging the bases, where if you didn't have a 3-run homer, you weren't scoring any runs. At least now I have some confidence that they can get guys on base and they can score in other ways. Yes, they're hitting home runs right now, but at least this offense is dynamic.
Right, and they're up on top of the league in stolen bases, I think, too.
Yeah.
Which is something we haven't seen. Even Chase Headley has, what, 4 stolen bases, maybe?
Yeah, of course. 5, I think.
5. Oh, I shortchanged him. But, yeah, no, they're more versatile, I think. They're not locked into a big-name free eight, you know, a guy that they signed who's now older. They can move guys around. But the runners in scoring position thing, I think, they need to improve on.
It's another reason why I just have no use for Chris Carter, because he is that old guy that we just talked about clogging the bases type, where if he doesn't
he's a station guy, exactly.
And if he doesn't hit a home run, then he's useless.
Right.
Bird needs to start hitting. All right, let's get into some mailbags. This first one comes from Nathan, and he says, "I was wondering what would happen if the Yankees traded Tanaka. What would be a good, what would be a fair return, and who would be a good trade partner? I think Tanaka would make the Dodgers a lot better. Imagine Tanaka in the same rotation as Kershaw. I was thinking either Cody Bellinger or a package for Yadier Alvarez, Yuleski Diaz, and Keibert Reyes. I'm not even going to pretend to know who those players are. I know who Cody Bellinger is because the Dodgers just called him up. They're not trading him. He's one of the best prospects in baseball."
Yeah, I don't know who. I think if the Yankees were out of it and they were in a position to trade Tanaka for prospects like they did with Miller and Chapman and Beltran last year, I think you would know more about who needs a starting pitcher closer to the deadline. I don't think that's something you can answer right now.
And what do you think about Tanaka's opt-out situation?
Well, the Yankees have said, I mean, they haven't confirmed it. It was like, you know, it was a back page thing that if he opts out, they're not going to re-sign him.
Well, it didn't even say they're not going to re-sign him. It's just that they said it was kind of like that they weren't definitely going to sign him, if that makes sense.
Right. I don't know. I think it depends on the rest of the year he has and how he feels physically.
First of all, we all hope this team is not out of contention come July. So that's the reason why I don't think they're going to trade him. But I just don't even think they're going to trade him because I think they're going to want to re-sign him.
Yeah, they need pitching. I mean, who else do they have? It's not like they have a guy waiting. Caprillion was supposed to be that guy that was waiting in the wings to start, but he's out for a year and a half.
Justus Sheffield's their top pitching prospect at this point, but he's still a couple years away, I think.
Right, yeah, he's not ready yet. So they need Tanaka more than Tanaka needs the Yankees, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think, though, that's why Severino, with how he's looked so far earlier in the season, is huge for this team going forward.
Right. Now, this was a huge year for Severino, for sure, because he was so good in the bullpen that you start to wonder, maybe this guy's, you know, cut out for the bullpen. Like, Betances was a failed starter who went to the pen, but Severino has responded.
And then, and I feel like the Yankees, though, then can produce a lot of starters like the Jordan Montgomery type.
Yeah. Who else have we heard about? Chance Adams, right?
Yep, Chance Adams. And then, I mean, all the guys who were really competing for that number five spot. Chad Green, mm-hmm. Luis Sessa.
Sessa, yeah, we still haven't seen him yet.
He's having a really good start in AAA.
Mm-hmm. And then Mitchell, you still can't forget about him.
Who I think might get shipped down at least until his arm is fresh again after Sunday.
Yeah, they probably need a fresh pitcher for the pen.
Yeah.
But another thing with Tanaka, which is interesting, I think, is, you know, the whole thing with Chapman, they traded him and then they re-signed him, and Cashman can say that that wasn't part of the plans. Could there be a thing with Tanaka? I know it's not tampering, but where there's a mutual agreement that he will opt out and they can trade him for prospects and then just re-sign him.
That's that would be creative. It certainly would be creative. I don't know if Tanaka. See, Chapman strikes me as the guy who is just going to go to the top bidder.
But he turned down more money.
No, he didn't. The Yankees were the top bidder.
The Marlins were.
They were?
He said that the Marlins offered him more money.
Is that confirmed?
I don't know.
I feel like the Marlins are always in on free agents, but they're never really in on free agents, except that one year where they signed everybody.
Well, they will be when Jeter's the owner. Just wait.
Now, Jeter strikes me as an owner who wants to build through the draft and development.
Homegrown, right.
So those 11,000 fans on a nightly basis can really see a nice young team. All right, I got a couple of Chris Carter rants to read and then a Chris Carter question. So let's start it off with Robin Lett. If I have to sit here and listen to Michael Kay tell me again that Chris Carter hit 41 home runs last year, I'm going to lose my mind. How many times has he struck out with runners on base this season? At this point, surely the runners need to be sent home from third every time Carter is on deck. I'll take my chances against the arm versus watching him not be able to get the freaking barrel on the bat. Rant over. This next one is from Michael DeSimone. Why is Chris Carter still allowed to be on a baseball team? I don't think he could make a varsity high school team. I don't think I would want him on my slow pitch softball team. He has no idea how to swing a bat, and I'm convinced this supposed 41 home runs hit last year were fake. All right, this one is from Ryan. This Chris Carter thing is ridiculous. This guy just plain sucks. At what point is Girardi going to realize that? It seems utterly obvious to the rest of the world that Carter cannot put together good at-bats, and it seems to be causing Bird more of a problem because Carter is taking time from him, which we kind of already touched on. Then Ryan asks, what about moving Headley over to first base and Torres at third base?
That's interesting. I mean, I think at this point, Carter is the new Stephen Drew.
Yes, absolutely.
He's the scapegoat for everything. Everyone wants him run out of town. It's just so hard because he hit 41 home runs and a full 600 something at bats. He's not getting that here.
I don't even know how he did that in a full at bats. I don't understand how he makes contact more than like 5% of the time. His swing, he one arms these lazy swings. I don't get it. I don't get why you would ever, first of all, throw him a fastball. But how he ran into 40 home runs is baffling.
I said this on Sunday watching him swing. I'm like, this guy doesn't swing hard. He just waves the bat through the zone. It's strange. I agree. I don't know how he hit 41 home runs last year. He's not hitting that this year. He's not getting the playing time. So when he does get the playing time, he's striking out. So what good is he? I completely agree with what everyone said. I don't know what you do with him, though. It's too early to trade him. You're not going to get anything for him. Do they eat $3 million? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think the $3 million is going to be an issue. I think he's on this team until there is a healthy Tyler Austin, if we do ever see a healthy Tyler Austin this year.
Tyler Austin, haven't heard that name.
Been MIA.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't heard anything about him. Nothing.
Right. It's kind of worrisome.
Yeah. Yeah.
But don't you agree that, I mean, he's at least there until they can have another backup first baseman come in? Because, you know, the funny thing is Carter has been decent in the field. He actually made a really nice pick today on a ball. And I thought that he was going to be absolutely horrendous in the field and mediocre to bad at the plate. And he's been horrendous at the plate
and decent.
Decent in the field.
Yeah, and he made some good plays at Fenway, too, in the field. I don't know. He fell in the Yankees' lap, and the Yankees couldn't pass up. They saw the 41 home runs, and they were like, oh, we got to sign this guy. It's like 2 weeks until spring training. We got to sign this guy, and now he just doesn't fit. All the other pieces on this team fit. Carter does not fit.
Exactly. I said that from day one. And home runs were something that were harder to find in 2010. So if you had a 40 home run hitter, you fit him in your lineup because you couldn't find that many home runs. Everyone's hitting 20 home runs now.
Yeah.
I mean, home runs are up around the league. Now we're off to the most home runs ever in baseball, 2017. We're on pace for. So home runs are not hard to find. The Yankees are hitting a ton of home runs, and they're not coming from Chris Carter. So I got no use for his 41 home runs in 2016.
And how about the Brewers letting him go and they get Eric Thames?
Yeah, what did he do in Korea?
I don't know.
It's not legal. That's all I know.
Yeah.
I know he's been, didn't he say he's been tested already like two or three times?
Yeah, and he said he's got plenty of blood and urine if they want to keep testing him. So,
that just tells you it's not really random testing. They're like, all right, something's going on here. Maybe he found some weird Asian PEDs that are that hasn't made it to the Western world, but he did something. There's no way. I mean, it's not the first guy we've seen do this, right? Cecil Fielder did this too. It was 30 years ago.
He was like the player of the year in Korea, and then he comes over and he was basically done with Major League Baseball. He goes to Korea, and then he comes back, and he's on, you know, winning World Series with the Yankees. But that's just crazy. The Brewers let Carter go, hit 41 home runs, and now they got this guy who's better than Carter and hitting, you know, he's the league leader in home runs. It's crazy.
It's wild. So, what do you think about Ryan's question, though, moving Headley to first base and Therese to third base? And let's play a scenario where it's June 1st. We're at May 1st now. It's June 1st, and Bird is still hitting like 130.
It makes sense. Headley's played there in the past. He could definitely do it. That could be a good way to... I mean, if you're gonna give Holiday a day off, you could DH. I know Carter is not a fan favorite, but you can DH Carter. You can give Bird a day off. You can move Headley to first and Therese at third. So I could see it happening, but as long as Carter is on this team, Girardi is gonna give him at bats because of. They just love the potential that he has, that he could put a ball over the fence at any at-bat. So,
And I guess if all else fails, we can just have Brian Mitchell be our first baseman.
Right.
Our final mailbag question is a Twitter question from @BigWanky. He says, can you address fans starting the wave with bases loaded and Ellsbury up? Gotta agree with Noah Syndergaard on this one. Ban the wave. You were in the stadium. Did you participate in the wave?
Absolutely not. This is the one thing I hate the most, especially at the new Yankee Stadium, is the wave. It's like, you're missing the game. You're missing an important part of the game. And just think about the concept of the wave and how dumb it is.
Wee! Put my hands up! Wee!
And people are so amazed. Oh, look at it go around the whole stadium. Who cares? What is the fascination with it? I don't get it. It's so amateur that I refuse to take part in it. Refuse.
I almost make a point whenever a wave is going by to like really sit down and like make it known I'm sitting down and get as many people around me to sit down.
Right. And look annoyed that people are doing it. It's awful. It's the worst.
Yeah. It's one of those. I feel like there's a few annoying things at Yankee Stadium and maybe about the new Yankee Stadium that it's not the same.
Nope. No, it's not. It's completely different. I mean, I can get into that in a whole nother Yeah, I can go an hour talking about that, but it's awful. The wave is terrible. Syndergaard is right. Should be banned. Even the bleachers are doing it. The right field bleachers are doing it now at the stadium. That never happened.
It's, well, Bald Vinny's not there anymore to lead them.
the wave police. That's right.
Yeah. If on June 10th, we can promise sections 205 and 206 will not be participating in any wave.
No, and if you do the wave, you're getting ejected from the building. So.
But at least now we have entire sections to kill it.
Right, right. We can stop it. And it's tracks, that's true.
All right, thanks everyone who submitted mailbag questions. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can tweet us at Yankees Podcast. My handle is at @Andrew_Rotondi. You can find Rich on Twitter at RackCity27. And Scott's is at Scott Reinen. You can submit mailbags at BronxPinstripes.com/podcast. Call the voicemail line 646-480-0342. Starting next podcast, we're going to be playing some of those rants that people have been leaving. So thank you for doing that. Keep them coming. And a reminder, use code COMEBACK for 25% off in the Bronx Pinstripes fan shop. Rich, thanks a lot for joining.
Of course. It was fun, man. It's been a while. Good to be back. And hopefully it'll be on again soon.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next time. Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.